We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello and welcome everyone to the Riverfront Red Show. This is episode number 526 of the World's Most Dangerous Podcast, where we will discuss, you better believe it, the Cincinnati Reds and specifically the most intriguing spring training prospects. With me this week is a longtime friend of the program, resident prospect guru, pizza enthusiast, and the head honcho over at RedLegNation.com and RedsMinorLeagues.com, Doug Gray. Doug, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
I am doing great. It's baseball season is upon us. We are, I think, as of recording this, 3 weeks away from opening day. So sparks are flying and emotions are running high over here. I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah, it's not a bad time to be a Reds fan right now, I'll be honest with you. There's a lot to look forward to, and yeah.
Well, I was going to do this in just a second, but let's go ahead and do it right now. I ask everybody that comes on, how excited are you about this 2024 season, and where does that level of excitement sort of compare to seasons past?
So I'm excited for the team, and it's not necessarily just because of the Reds themselves. I think this division stinks, and so that certainly helps the Reds. I think if they were in any of the other two divisions, I'd feel less thrilled about them. Going up against the Dodgers or the Braves and Phillies. Yeah. Not exactly the same thing as going up against the Cardinals and Pirates and Brewers and Cubs. And not that I think that the Reds are bad. I just don't think that they're good. But I don't think you've got to be good to stay in contention with the current iteration of the National League Central. I think there's a lot of upside with this team. But I also think that, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they were roughly 500 either. Like, they don't – right now, they don't have that for sure – superstar caliber player that can carry the team. Mm-hmm. I think that there's, you know, Hunter Green on the pitching staff, for example. Nick Lodolo wouldn't surprise me if he were to remain healthy to have a very strong season as a pitcher. You know, on, you know, the position guys, Ellie De La Cruz, of course he could be a superstar. Sure. It wouldn't shock me, you know, if Christian Encarnacion Strand hit 30-something home runs. Like, they've got the potential to have those kind of guys, but there's no safety in saying that this guy is going to be the guy on a team like a lot of other teams have. That's really my only holdup, so to speak, with the Reds. But, yeah, it's an exciting young team. I just think that the error bars are pretty big in terms of which way they could go.
I think that's totally reasonable, and it's not something that we've really touched on. We've been letting spring training optimism reign supreme here these last few weeks. But it's also fair that if this was a 500 team, sure, it would be a bit of a disappointment compared to some of the lofty expectations that us and other people are throwing on this young squad. But in the big scheme of Reds fandom, for somebody that's, you know, 40 or younger, 40, even a little older than that, they haven't seen a whole lot of 500 seasons.
I turned 40 the week after the regular season starts. And I legitimately don't have memories of the Reds advancing in the playoffs.
Yes. Last time
it happened, I was 11 years old. So, I mean, yeah, it's possible. Realistically, I probably should remember 1995. And I mean, I remember some things from 95, but I don't remember that series. Like, I don't remember it.
No, of course not. I say all the time on here, but I'm just slightly younger than you, and the Reds have only made the playoffs 6 times in my life.
Yeah.
And that stat alone is why I am so excited about this season. Because you mentioned it. If we were staring down a likely third place finish in one of these other National League divisions, we're not reaching the heights of excitement that we are currently holding on to. But they could come and run away with this division. Now, it's entirely possible they could finish, you know, third. I'm not even going to say fourth because I'm not putting that evil out into the world. But these things are possible. But they haven't been possible. That playoff push, that division title has not been possible in a while. This hasn't felt possible. So we're going to hang on to that for as long as we can. Before we get any further, got to do my due diligence here. Please head over to youtube.com/riverfrontcincy and or your favorite podcast app and give us the subscribe, likes, and follows. Head over to redlegnation.com. Give Doug a follow. I don't know if you subscribe over there. Is that what's going on? I check it every day.
Yeah, just do that. It's better and easier.
That's right. RedsMinorLeagues.com. Also fantastic. Host of contributors at RedLegNation.com. Some names you'll recognize if you listen to this show with any regularity. Fantastic stuff over there. And as always, huge, huge, huge shout out to the Patreon family. We love you guys. Couldn't do it without you. And if anybody wants to join the family, they do that at patreon.com/riverfrontcincy. All right, Doug, let's get into the meat of this sauce. I don't know if that makes any sense. I think I just made that up.
Let's just go with it.
I like sauces that have meat. We're gonna stick with it. We got a lot of prospect talk coming up, but before we get there, who are some of the, you know, the regulars that have been standing out to you in camp so far?
I mean, I think that Ellie De La Cruz, you know, he's been drawing walks. The strikeouts are still kind of high. I mean, it's all a small sample size, so does any of it really matter? But I think that if you're looking for things that kind of want to, you know, go against what you may have perceived, what Ellie De La Cruz has done in terms of walking so far has been standout. I mean, you know, guy hit a 470-foot home run the other day.
He hit an absolute nuke.
The next game, he goes 1-for-1 with 2 walks and he steals 3 bases. I mean, he's unlike a player that I can remember being in a Red uniform. Like, same for you, probably. You know, my recollection of Eric Davis wasn't the prime Eric Davis.
Right.
But hearing about, you know, that 1987, 1988 Eric Davis, that's kind of how I feel about Ellie De La Cruz. Now, obviously, Eric Davis actually did it over a much longer period of time. But when you think about what it could be, That's kind of like the same feeling that I feel that people are trying to tell me about when they watched Eric Davis in his prime.
Exactly.
And I mean, it's just that's what sticks out to me. And it's nothing really different from last year, aside from, you know, we saw what happened when he wasn't, quote unquote, on a heater like he feels like right now. But I mean, that's the thing that's really stood out to me the most. Nobody's played enough to really do anything that makes me go, oh, this is different. There's not a TJ Antone in 2020 situation where he showed up in camp throwing 5 miles per hour harder. Like, that's not a thing that's happened. So everybody's just kind of been, you know, hey, this guy's off to a good start. This guy's off to a nice start. You know, Jacob Hurtubise is like 5-for-9. He's hitting like 556. So that's cool to see, but it's also like, okay, he's got 9 at-bats.
Are you saying that he's not going to keep that up throughout the entire season?
I mean, I'm not going to say it. So no.
Yeah, the conversation starts with Ellie De La Cruz. The guy, just quick stat lines in 22 plate appearances, and the caveat that we threw out 1,000 times last week, spring training, the stats barely matter at all, if at all, and especially not with the sample sizes that we are looking at up to this point. Through 22 plate appearances, though, and they do have another game tonight as we are recording this, 412 batting average, 545 on base percentage, and a 765 slugging percentage. 3 extra base hits with that 470-foot absolute nuke that you talked about, 3 stolen bases, and that 5-to-7 walk to strikeout ratio. If he keeps that anywhere close to that, the ceiling is unheard of. The guy can simply do things that, I don't know, it doesn't make any sense to me when I'm watching it. And he seems to be playing with a bit of a confidence. Like, he he knows how good he is and the tools that he have, and he's trying to use them every chance he gets. Like even some little like dink hits that barely go anywhere in the infield. He's sprinting down there. If you a little soft grounder to the pitcher, he's sprinting trying to make a play because he knows that he can. I'm loving what I'm seeing so far. And as the prospect guy, you probably watched him coming up more than just about anybody else. You know, what are your realistic expectations for Ellie this season?
So I do think that he's going to walk more than he walked last year. You know, you can see it especially if you watched him almost every day, like I have the last couple of years. You could see him making those adjustments, even at times when the walk numbers weren't there. You could see him being more patient, taking pitches that he would have swung at just a week before. And, you know, even last year when he was in the minor leagues, now he wasn't there for long. He started the year on the injured list in Louisville. He missed like the first 3 weeks. And when he came back, he was ice cold. I think for like the first 10 games, he was like, he had like one walk and like 19 strikeouts or something. But then for the next like 6 or 7 weeks, he almost walked as often as he struck out, and then he got called up. I think that, you know, last year was it was a struggle for him at times. I mean, we saw it down the stretch. He hit like it was under 200 for nearly 2 months. Lots of strikeouts, not very many walks. I think he's going to walk more. I think he's always going to strike out a lot. Probably not as much as he did last year, but I mean, he's 6'5", 6'6", depending on who you ask. He's going to strike out a lot, especially in today's day and age. I mean, you know, pitchers are, they're wizards. It doesn't make sense what they can do. You know, the days of the guy, you know, throwing slop up there are pretty much over. Everybody throws 97. Like, it's just...
If you ever get mad at the 21-year-old for striking out too much, then just go follow Pitching Ninja on Twitter and spend 5 minutes and you'll be like, oh, okay, got it.
Yeah, like it's just everybody's going to strike out for the most part. Like it's going to happen. But I think he's going to walk more. I think that he is going to mature his game. I mean, realistically, I mean, I'm expecting somewhere around an 800 OPS. Obviously, it's just like the team. I think the error bars are pretty big there.
Yeah, they definitely are.
Just because of the kind of player he is. I mean, if you look at his raw talent, I mean, he's a creative game video, like a creative player on the video game with everything maxed out. Like, it's not realistic, but somehow it is. But at the same time, like, he has some warts in his game that he needs to work on. I personally think that he's going to be able to take some strides there, but until he does it, who really knows? Like, that's just me making an educated guess based on what I have seen him do against, like, realistically, not major leaguers. But at the same time, you know, he was doing it when he was 19 and 20 years old in the upper minor leagues. Usually guys that can play at a high level at those levels in the minors at his age, they tend to turn out okay.
Yeah, they often do. If Ellie has an 800 OPS, 800 or better, with his ability to steal bases and his potential to be a plus defender, you're probably looking at that's an all-star caliber season.
Yeah.
He's going to be responsible for wins almost by himself, by just creating runs and creating that havoc. And if anybody gets mad about Ellie having an 800 OPS, go kick rocks. Get out of here with that. That would be an incredible season for somebody his age and his as raw as he is. After Ellie, I want to give a shout-out to my guy Tyler Stephenson, who started a little bit slow this spring, but now has two home runs, tied for the team lead with our boy CES. Christian Encarnacion Strand is also looking like – I'm huge on him this year. I think he's going to – he's just so strong.
He really is. It's funny. That's the only way I can describe it. It's just funny. Like, some of the swings that he takes – not that they're necessarily bad swings, but, like, the where he makes contact with the ball, and then it's like, oh, that went 430 feet. You're like,
yep.
What?
His first home run of the spring, I believe, he hit one of the dead center, and it was like three quarters of a swing.
Yeah.
He barely got a hold of it, and it was just an absolute tank job. So shouts to him. Willie Benson is still looking good out there. Got a couple knocks. I got a base hit against a left-handed pitcher, which I was happy to see. I've been
He was happy to see it, too. He talked about it after the game. He's like, you know, I told him I want to play more against lefties, and then he went out and he showed him, hey, you know, I told you I want to do it. I'm going to try and do it if you give me the opportunity. Let's go.
And you can't take anything away from a couple of bats, but man, if he figures that out, if he, you know, fills that hole in his game, then all of the, the complaining about not getting a corner outfielder in the offseason, it's done. Will Benson can be an everyday guy. Oh, man. And you'd love to see it because such a fun guy to root for. A lot of these guys are so fun to root for.
They are. That's the thing. Like, you know, your brother Chad, he would always say, you know, if you're not going to be good, at least be fun.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully these guys can be both. Like, if nothing else, they're going to be fun.
Chad should take his own advice.
Exactly. You hear that, Chad?
He doesn't listen to this podcast. What are we kidding?
I'm gonna rip this clip and send it to him.
It'd be a good sport. One last person that I wanted to shout out just because I feel like we have to is somebody that I've almost felt bad for the way I've been talking about this guy just because I've been rooting for so many other people to make an impact. But at a very, very early point in spring training, Stuart Fairchild has been an absolute monster fighting for that 26th man on the roster spot. He has got a 500 batting average, 1.071 slugging percentage. Good for a 1.571 OPS. Also has 2 home runs, 15 total bases. He's on fire right now. Have you noticed anything different in what he's doing compared to what he's done in the past? Or is he just kind of hot and is in all likelihood going to be that 4A player that we're used to?
I mean, it's tough to say, you know, noticing differences. We've watched, you know, 2 or 3 games because fortunately or unfortunately as Reds fans, we get to watch the fewest spring training games of any fan base in baseball.
Yeah, we can rant on that whenever you want to. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, well.
I'm looking at other teams that have almost every single game televised. They've got StatCast data for every single swing, every time a player makes contact, and we can't even watch games.
Yeah, as Reds fans, we get 2 StatCast games and 12 spring training games. You know, the Angels broadcast all of their games except for on days when they have a split squad game, in which case they only broadcast 1.
The Angels.
Yeah. Okay. Let's get back to Stuart. Right. He's having a great spring, but yeah, as far as noticing something different, no. But yeah, you know, I've seen him take 4 swings. So now I will say the home run he hit yesterday was an absolute blast. Like, it went off the batter's eye, but it was so high up the batter's eye that you didn't see the ball hit the batter's eye. You just saw it bounce back to the field. So, like, it was 400 plus feet, and it was like plus 400 feet.
Yeah, he's got that power. He's got that defensive flexibility. I would have to assume he's got the leg up on that 26 spot. Is that what you're seeing as well?
Well, I mean, I would say yeah, but I'm not necessarily sure that I agree with that part of it. We can talk about that later.
All right. We'll get into that.
There's a viewer mail question in there that I kind of want to – I can address that a little bit more with.
I love it. Let's not bury it. All right. Let's get on some injury updates real quick. Unlike the last couple episodes, all good news on that front. Matt McClain is back. Looks like he is going to be back in the lineup today. Soon-ish? They haven't announced the day, have they?
They did. Let me double check here. I'm pretty sure he's not in the lineup today.
They definitely said
he's not in the lineup tonight.
Could be in the lineup this week.
Yes.
So I'm not sure if there's an exact date.
Specific with that, yeah.
But he is coming back, and that's incredible news. Just to recap, our boy missed the last month of 2023 with an oblique injury. Got a late start to spring training due to another injury, a different injury in the same oblique. Is my understanding.
Yeah.
Take that however you want to. I don't know how that kind of science works.
Yeah, I didn't go to medical school, so.
Yeah, I'm not trained for that. Yes, last year, he was arguably, I think, the Reds' best player. You could definitely make that argument. Led the team in batting average and on-base percentage. Here's a little fun fact for you, and this ties back to the Eric Davis comment you were talking about earlier. Last year, over a 162-game pace, which – players rarely, if ever, play that many games anymore. He was on pace for 29 home runs and 25 stolen bases. Only 3 Reds have ever eclipsed that. I mentioned Eric Davis. Any idea who the other 2 are?
Veda Pinson.
Not Veda Pinson.
No. Barry Larkin.
Barry Larkin.
That one was obvious.
The other one surprised me.
Give me an era.
The last fun era of Reds baseball.
I don't know. You're gonna surprise me on this one.
He was that dude, BP, Brandon Phillips.
I'm embarrassed. I should be embarrassed, and I am.
I put you on the spot. That wasn't fair of me.
It wasn't that long ago. I remember it. I just didn't have it right there. I wasn't thinking.
BP did it just barely. But the fun fact of all that was that Eric Davis in 1987, 37 home runs and 50 stolen bases in 129 games.
They were basically playing with like not ping pong balls, but like the super bouncy balls in 1987, but still.
Hey, bring them back. I want to see Ellie go for 80 and 80.
Yeah.
I love it. So the big question is, Matt McClain is playing. Do you think there's enough time to get him in game shape and ready for opening day?
Oh, yeah. I mean, from today, there's 3 weeks. If he were a starting pitcher, I'd have some questions and concerns. I don't think there's not enough time for that. I think for a position player, yeah, you can send him in on B games in the backfield to get, you know, basically get in at bat every inning. Mm-hmm. Like he's got time as long as he's healthy to get ready for the regular season. I think they can get that done.
Yeah, I think so as well, and I hope so, man. This team, they seem to feed off his energy a little bit, and yeah,
well, I mean, he's really good. Like,
and it helps that you're really stinking good.
When you're really good and you're always getting hits and making plays and stealing bases, like it's hard for people to not thrive off of that. Mm-hmm. Like it's an exciting brand of baseball that he plays, and he's good.
Like, top-notch forearms on that guy too, just absolute monsters. So Matt McClain, you think he does have enough time? I agree. You mentioned that if he were a pitcher, it would be a little bit different. So let's move on to some other positive news on the injury front, if not necessarily for, you know, the opening series of the season. Nickel Dolo. So we were pretty scared as of last week. We got that sort of gloomy report, that cryptic report that he wasn't quite where he wanted to be and there were still some issues and he was going back for more testing. Well, after that news, it looks like, good Lord willing, the creek don't rise, that it is not a huge issue. He's thrown a couple innings since then. They said he looked good. His next step is throwing in a spring training game. So we should see him one of these days, really soon, I'm not sure.
Charlie Goldsmith of the Inquirer had it maybe 20 minutes ago. He's going to be pitching on Sunday. He'll be in a spring training game on Sunday.
Fantastic. So anybody listened to this podcast last week, me and Tim Daniel and I were stressed about Nickel Dolo. So this is fantastic development. And can we tune in on Sunday?
No, I cannot tune in on Sunday.
Get out the front.
But to expand a little bit further on that, just to, you know, put it out there, David Bell did say that he wasn't sure that Lodolo was going to be ready to be one of the first five starters. But after that, he thinks that he could be ready. And he threw out the date April 9th. Happy birthday, me, by the way. That could be the date that they could target for him. So, you know, however they want to handle that, I'm not sure. I didn't count the days out to April 9th from the start of the season. As far as, you know, if they put him on the 10-day IL to begin the season, mm-hmm. if they could bring him back that day or not. It could work out that maybe he doesn't even have to head off to the minors for a quote-unquote rehab stint or anything like that. So, as long as he stays healthy, you know, there's a chance we could see him early April.
And that's a huge win. There is no realm where that is bad news. With what we have dealt with this guy, what he has dealt with, we are simply happy to have him back. And if he can look anything like he was before these injuries, then that's good news, Reds fans. Here's a question for you. Where, again, with the realistic expectations, where do you think Nickel Dolo slots in the pecking order of this Reds rotation?
I mean, somewhere in the middle. And where do you slide in? As long as you're not the number five guy, I don't think that it really matters that much, because generally speaking, the number five guy on most teams, this guy who's kind of a swing man, they avoid you when they can. Sometimes you get moved to the bullpen, sometimes you get back to AAA. Probably not going to happen with this Reds team, because they've got, I don't know, seven or eight legitimate starters if everybody's healthy. But I mean, I think Hunter Green's going to get the opening day start.
I think so too.
Frankie Montas is a guy that they're counting on, relying on. And he's got a track record that, you know, it makes sense that he'd be the number one or number two guy if he's healthy, which he appears to be right now. So I don't think that we should be too concerned about that. I mean, after that, you've got, you know, Andrew Abbott, who, you know, he was very good last year, but was his rookie season any different or better than Nick Lodolo's? Not really. They were both really good as rookies. So, you know, number three, number four right there with Andrew Abbott, it seems about right to me. But I mean, you know, where do you slide in Graham Ashcraft with that? He had that really bad eight start stretch from like the middle of May through June, but the 20 starts outside of that, he had like an ERA of like 2.5 all year.
Yeah, it was nails.
So like, again, yeah, you have to love kind of what the Reds have done with their starting pitching, because we're talking about Graham Ashcraft like, well, maybe he's the number five guy, and he was absolutely dominant for 20 starts last year.
Yeah. That's why I'm so excited about this season, man. And it's not just the pitching. It's the same thing on the offense. They just have dudes. They have so many dudes. I can't remember this kind of depth in a long, long time, if ever. And I'm here for it. Nick Lolo, his ceiling could be anywhere from one of the top starters in the game, or he could settle into a really, really solid three or four. And you have to have those guys. And they're going to be cautious with him. They should be cautious with him. But a healthy Nick Lodolo really changes the outlook for this team.
Absolutely.
All right, some more injury updates. Jonathan India has yet to make his debut. And if you are listening to this on Friday, it sounds like he's debuting today. Today as in Friday.
And you can watch it.
Oh, whoa. Now that is news. That is absolute ridiculousness. The third game all season, the fourth, I don't know.
It'll be the third day in a row we can watch the game, which is crazy.
We are spoiled. We don't deserve this team. Definitely pumped for Jonathan India. He's been battling that plantar fasciitis. So I got a question. Two questions. One, where is he going to play? And two, is there a higher level of excitement and anticipation for this debut or for Shohei Ohtani's in a Dodger uniform?
I definitely think getting India back is way more exciting. As far as where he's going to play, I mean, I don't know where he's going to play Friday, but I think he's going to play second, third, left field, right field, as far as designated hitter during the season. Fair, unfair, however you want to look at it. I know that there are some varying opinions out there, but he lost his job to Matt McClain. Like, it's that simple. But, you know, Jonathan India is still he's a everyday regular caliber player that the Reds just don't have an everyday spot for. Heck, there might be a few of those guys on this roster, to be honest.
Yeah, I think so.
And so, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, however you want to look at it, David Bell and his staff are going to have to find ways to mix and match, you know, different guys at different positions every day based on matchups or how certain guys are feeling that day, who needs rest, you know, whatever it is. But I think that India is probably going to play four or five times a week. It's just not going to be in any set spot.
Yeah, definitely something if you want something to be looking out for when you're watching the three games that are televised for the rest of the season. Where Jonathan India plays is going to be fun to keep an eye on, just because he's only ever played second base and DH, the major league level. And I don't think he played any third his rookie year, did he?
No, as far as the field goes, he's only played second base in the majors. He played some third in the minors. He played shortstop for like 2 weeks in the minors. That's not going to happen in the big leagues. He's never played outfield before, like anywhere that I'm aware of. So that's the real interesting part. And what stinks is like the Reds kind of gave him the inclination, like, hey, in the offseason, you know, maybe work with that a little bit, because that's kind of we kind of want to explore that. And his plantar fasciitis just kind of kept him from doing nearly as much of that as he and the team would have liked.
Yeah, true. So it'll at least be interesting to keep an eye on. But you touched on something that a lot of people are considering this a negative, that these players won't have everyday positions. I've decided to zag completely And I think that we've been looking at it in all the other professional sports. Time off is often beneficial. Playing every day. I mean, one of my favorite rants is about Cal Ripken Jr. and his, you know, incredible streak. Well, he probably should have taken some days off and maybe he performed a little bit better during some slumps. I think we're going to see these guys, you know, like you said, playing 5 days a week, getting a day off. They might not love it. And there may be something to the argument that, you know, regularity is more important than rest. But I think this sort of positionless load management baseball is going to, with the depth this team has, is going to prevent any sort of extended lulls that you often see in the dog days of baseball. And I think it's going to just contribute significantly to this team's odds of making the playoffs.
Yeah, you know, I do give some credence to the playing every day kind of thing, and it helps you over the course of the season. But I think that we generally speak about that versus real bench players who get, you know, one plate appearance every 2 days as a pinch hitter. That's not the role that the Reds are going to be giving a lot of these guys. You know, they're going to be platooning these guys. And even the platoon guys are probably going to play almost every day. They just may not get 4 or 5 plate appearances every day. You know, and it's the same thing with Jonathan India. He may not play every day, but he might play four days a week, 5 days a week. And so it's different in terms of the way we traditionally think about the everyday versus bench guy. But I think that you're right. Like the fatigue management aspect of things, like it really does come into play. Even for guys that are in their early 20s, like half this team seems to be, like it's 162 games over 183 days. Like that is a lot. You know, these guys aren't just showing up at 6 o'clock to play. Like they're at the field at 2 o'clock and they don't leave until 10:30 or 11.
Exactly. Like
it's a full day's work, and it's a lot of work. It's hard work.
Sure. And a lot of these dudes have been dealing with injury issues currently or historically.
Yeah. I mean, I think Jonathan India would play through anything if they let him, like, especially Jonathan India. And so, you know, it may help him too.
Sort of protecting from himself a little bit. I used to see David Bell. It's the Charlie Kelly from Always Sunny meme. When he's just looking for Pepe Sylvia, he's got all the threads connecting one thing to another. That's how David Bell's going to come up with the lineup every day.
I hope the Reds have a better system in place than that, but, you know.
Yeah, we'll see. David Bell, you know, see if he can win me over this season. Last little injury thing I want to touch on is Noelvi Marte has made his debut. Hard to put into words how pumped up I am to watch him play for a full season. You know, he returned to game action and immediately hit two balls with an exit velocity over 100 miles an hour. He is the top prospect in the system. I'm putting quote marks on that because he does still qualify for all the prospect rankings lists, despite getting a little cup of coffee last year. And I guess my question to you is, do you see any world where he starts to see, barring injury, any world where he starts the season in AAA?
I don't think so. And I think that goes back to what happened last year. Basically, you know, a bunch of teams in baseball did this, but the day that Marte was called up was the first day that, like, it wouldn't penalize the teams one way or the other. As far as this year goes, in terms of if a guy wins the rookie of the year, they get, you know, the draft pick out of it. And so, because of the way the Reds handled that, and there's a tiny chance that it's pure coincidence that that's when they called him up. But yeah, that's why they called him up then and when they did. But yeah, I think that was their plan all along.
Well, he also made it easy on him because he wasn't setting the world on fire in the minors. Yeah. Now, he set it on fire when he got up to the bigs.
Yeah, and you know, they seem to like him, and we've all seen plenty of reasons for that. It just seems like it's kind of a foregone conclusion that if he's healthy, he's going to make the team. And it's, you know, kind of the same situation that we discussed with the other guys is, you know, where exactly is he going to play? I mean, he's probably going to play a lot of third base, but, you know, he might be a guy that gets a little bit of shortstop when Ellie needs a day off. He might DH sometimes because they went out and signed Jamer Candelario too. Like he's a third baseman, and they're not paying him to not play just about every day. But he also plays first, which is where CES plays. So there's going to be a lot of juggling of, you know, players and how everybody's going to fit in. But yeah, I just, for me, it's tough to see where Marte's not going to make the team unless he just goes out and doesn't get any more hits between now and start of the season.
Yeah, he reminds me of, this is going to be a weird comparison. When it comes to their presence and their approach in the batter's box, he reminds me of what we saw from Spencer Steer last year, where they just seem to be born to be in that batter's box and to hit baseballs. They have an approach that's well beyond their years. The difference between the two of them is that Nolan Marte's ceiling is a little bit higher than Spencer Steer's. I think this guy's got multi-time all-star, get some MVP votes, if not win it, potential. I'm not saying he's anywhere close to that right now. We've barely seen him play baseball, but I just love watching this guy step out in the baseball field.
Yeah, I like what you said there. Well, the Spencer Steer comparisons, it's interesting because I can see it. It didn't really click with me before, but as soon as you said it, I'm like, wait a minute. I can see it. It makes sense. The similar approach, yeah. They can use the entire field, and I think Marte's got a little bit more power to all parts of the field than Spencer Steer. But yeah, I can definitely see that one.
We'll be happy to have two Spencer Steers on this team.
Yes.
Keeps aside. All right, so a little recurring segment we've got going on called New Pitch Watch, because it's spring training and a lot of people have new pitches. Not a ton to report on this. We talked about Hunter Green working on a curve and a splitter. Have you seen anything, read anything, or just have any general thoughts on how those two pitches are progressing and really how important they could be to Hunter Green's growth and potential?
So I saw that Eno Saris of The Athletic, he updated his Stuff Plus metrics, which that's not necessarily based on how the hitters handle the pitch. It's just based on, you know, velocity, movement, things like that compared to the same kind of pitch that other guys are throwing.
For the layman, how nasty is it?
Yes. Now, mind you, that does not include whether a guy can throw it for strikes or not. It's just, you know, if the guy throws it for a strike, what are the, like, how good is it? Mm-hmm. And Hunter Green's splitter graded out very, very well. I did not see him comment on the curveball. It may be in the spreadsheet. I did not look at it. But I did see that he noted that the splitter was very, very good. So, good news. Good news, because it's not like Hunter Green's got some history of inability to throw strikes. So I'm not concerned about that aspect of things. So, yeah, I like that I saw that report because, again, you know, we don't get much Statcast. Although we did get Statcast from that game, which is why we got the metrics on it. But
thank God for other teams.
Yeah.
Yeah, if Hunter Green could develop that third pitch, then look out. We've all been waiting on him to take that little leap, and this could be exactly what needed to happen. We'll see the proof. You know, you got to prove it on the field, but we're watching that one closely. Another guy working on something is Brandon Williamson. He has been changed up his slider a little bit. I was reading they changed the grip in the offseason to try to induce more strikeouts. Didn't exactly dominate with it. He threw it against the Diamondbacks and gave up a bomb. But have you seen or heard anything about Brandon Williamson and his slider? Because he's looked pretty strong for the most part so far in spring training.
So I haven't seen anything specific about it, but let's also start out with the fact that throwing breaking balls in Arizona is not easy.
True.
Like it's not the ball doesn't, it's not quite the Coors Field effect, but it's similar. It's a well-known thing that, you know, breaking balls in Arizona don't break as much. And so, you know, I don't put too much into it especially for established guys that we know have performed and can perform. Mm-hmm. But also spring training is the time to work on things.
Exactly.
So, you know, if you're going out there to work on your slider, the hitters are going to pick up on that pretty quick that, hey man, he's throwing a lot of sliders today and they're not going to let you get away with it. Like their job is to go out there and hit it, whether you're working on it or not.
The hitter's not working on, you know, only I'm only swinging at fastballs today. Well, maybe they would.
Most guys aren't pulling the Joey Votto where they take 18 pitches a game because they just want to see pitches. Like, that's the thing Joey Votto would, you know, he'd do that in spring training because he didn't care about the stats of that day. He cared about getting ready for the season. And that's one of the ways that he did it. Most guys aren't Joey Votto, though. They're going out there, and if they get a hittable strike, They're going to hit it, or at least try to.
Yeah, well, that seems like a pretty good time to move on to our next weekly segment, which is the Joseph Daniel Votto update. I haven't gotten your opinion on this yet. He was just today on the Flippin' Bats podcast with Ben Verlander. This was following an appearance of the Dan Patrick Show. He's been crushing social media, threatening to leave out shopping carts, which is just truly, truly diabolical. Recreating the sad Keanu Reeves meme. Confirmed on the Flipping Back podcast that he is just having fun with it, and he is totally fine. So no wellness checks on Joey needed. What are your thoughts on the Votto saga, either how it relates to the 2024 Reds or just his prospects in the league this season at large?
I mean, in general, it makes me sad. Like, yes. I don't want to see Joey Votto go out the way that he went out. Getting tossed from a game, that sucked. On top of that, you know, he was playing hurt last year. He was coming off of surgery, and, you know, he said it multiple times, you know, he doesn't want to use that as an excuse, but I'm not him. I'll use it as an excuse.
Yeah.
It was clearly affecting him. I would like to see him get another opportunity. I don't give it any chance of being with the Reds, even if my opinion may vary on that. It's not going to happen.
Can I get 0.01%? Or you give me a hard zero.
I'm giving you a zero. It's not.
This has been episode 526.
Well, it's been nice being back on the podcast. I will never see you again. Goodbye.
We're still holding that hope over here. I'm glad you pointed. The injury thing is real. I mean, he's 40 years old, and they had to reattach his bicep and repair his shoulder. If that injury happened to me, I don't think I would get out of my bed for months. Oh, yeah, I couldn't scroll on my computer with that arm, and he was trying to play Major League Baseball. Somebody needs to give this man a chance. I don't care if it's the Oakland A's who don't care about winning and they want to sell some tickets. I would selfishly like it to be the Nationals because they're right up the road and he can hang out with his old buddy Nick Senzel. I don't know. I'm afraid you're correct.
Just somebody. Give him the chance and see what happens.
Yeah. There are obviously some bigger dominoes that need to fall. Blake Snell, two-time Cy Young winner, including the current reigning Cy Young Award winner, is still unsigned. But it just makes no sense to me that obviously he's probably not going to accept a minor league deal, but there are guys in camps that aren't nearly as accomplished as Joey Votto. That probably weren't as good as Joey was last year when he was still a league average hitter with 1.5 arms.
Yeah.
You know, he correctly pointed out in his interview with Ben Verlander that the last time he was fully healthy, he was one of the best hitters in Major League Baseball. Now, that was 2021. So none of us are getting any younger, but it seems that slope gets a little bit steeper the older you get, but somebody give this man a chance and let it be the Reds, you cowards. Bring him back. Sorry, Stuart Fairchild. All right. Sad Joey's talk is over. One last piece of news, and we're just going to use this to jump right into our topic of the week. The topic of the week is spring training's most interesting prospects, but when this got announced, we had to touch on it. The spring breakout rosters were announced. I had totally forgotten that they were doing this and got all kinds of excited all over again when they announced the rosters. Such a great idea. Essentially what they're doing is letting a bunch of the top prospects from across the league go toe-to-toe with other top prospects for their respective organizations. And just looking at the roster real quick, and you did a really nice write-up on this on RedLegNation.com. Who are some of the players you are most excited to see take the field?
So I'll start off with the guy that I'm most excited to see take the field. It's Alfredo Duno. He was the Reds' top international signing in 2023. He's an 18-year-old catcher. He got one of the biggest signing bonuses of the entire class in Major League Baseball. He crushed the ball in his debut, but he played in the Dominican Summer League. I mean, you can't watch those games. You can't listen to those games. I've seen a handful of clips of him play. He's exciting because of all the tools, the production that he had last year, but you've never seen him play. And so that's what I'm looking forward to the most, is because I've never seen him before. He's more of a mystery than anybody else. But, you know, like Rhett Lauder made that team. Now, we got to see him a little bit in spring training, but he's never pitched in a minor league game before.
Right.
He didn't pitch after the draft last year. Ty Floyd, same thing for him. He didn't pitch in a game last year after being drafted. It's going to be nice to see those guys. I think, you know, Rhett Lauder is one of those guys that he's so advanced. Like, I think in a different scenario, it's possible that he could have pulled a Mike Leake. It's not going to happen on this team because the Reds actually have a lot of pitching depth now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, had he just if you could just transport him and his career back in time to, say, you know, 2017, he's probably going to make the team. Like,
yeah.
But now, you know, he'll probably start in Double A because, you know, they've got options that they can work through, and, you know, they don't have to necessarily rush him, even if it might not be rushing him.
Right. It's a luxury.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to seeing what Cam Collier can do this year. Not that he was bad last year, but he didn't stand out last year either.
Yeah. I was hoping you'd bring him up.
There's a lot of things that I liked in the profile for Cam Collier last year, though. He's got to hit the ball in the air more. That's the only thing that I think is holding him back. He hits the ball so hard. Like, Baseball America had a thing on 18-year-old prospects that played full-season baseball last year. And his average X velocity was like 4 miles per hour harder than the average 18-year-old who played in full-season ball last year. And most 18-year-olds don't play in full-season ball. So you're a top prospect if you're 18 playing full-season ball. And he was hitting the ball so much harder than everybody else his age. If he can figure out a way to just hit the ball that much lower.
And that's a fixable problem.
Yeah, if he can get under the ball that much more, it's going to be it's going to happen real quick for him.
Yeah, he's going to regain all of that, you know, the prospect ranking pedigree that he lost in 1 year, which is nuts.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people nationally were underrating him. But we'll see. We've all got different opinions, but I really liked a lot of things that I saw from him, and I think that he's got the ability to make the adjustment that he's going to need to make.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Two other guys that I'm really pumped to watch that I haven't got to see a ton are Hector Rodriguez and Carlos Jorge. If you're in a dynasty league and those guys are available, run, don't walk. But what they have done at their ages, especially Hector Rodriguez, what did he get? Was the MVP or rookie? Was the MVP of the Dominican League?
He's the rookie of the year of the Dominican Winter League, but he was like fourth in the league in OPS as a 19-year-old. Like, the average player in that league is 29. He was the youngest player in the league and one of the best players in the league. Like, just silly stuff.
Just tools through the roof. And Carlos Jorge is another guy that kind of burst onto the scene a little bit. Last year, his OPS in his three professional seasons so far has been 1.015, 934, and 838. Like, the guy
he's ranked in the top four of OPS in every league he's played in, except for when he played in Dayton, where he didn't qualify. And he only played like 4 weeks.
Yeah. So keep an eye on those guys. And it's just a really cool thing. Like, a shout out to MLB for getting it right, which they so rarely do. But it looks like I'm on Red Leg Nation right now. They'll face the Rangers on March 14th and the Guardians on March 16th. Does every team get two games, or is that
just lucky? Just the Reds and just the Cardinals, because there's an odd number of teams in the Grapefruit League and the Cactus League. So somebody in each league has to play twice, so every team gets at least one game. The Reds just happen to be that team in Arizona, so they get to play twice. And you're going to like this. You can watch both games on MLB.com.
Pump it right into my veins. I love it. All right, before we talk about more prospects that we are excited to watch, there are a few that we are not going to be able to watch. The Reds did announce roster cuts. I have to pull this up on my phone because I don't have it pulled up on the browser. Quick rundown: Julian Aguiar, Edwin Arroyo, Tyler Callahan, Blake Dunn, Jacob Heatherly, Rhett Lauder, Zach Maxwell, Matt Nelson, Chase Petty, Reaver, San Martin. The two catchers, Michael Troutwine, and then Daniel Veohin have all been assigned to minor league camp. Now, I think some people will probably see this and be like, what are we doing here? Zach Maxwell throws a million miles an hour. He looks so good. Edwin Arroyo has been awesome. What are they doing? There's a perfectly logical explanation for this, Doug. What is it?
Pretty much none of these guys were realistically competing for a job. You know, among the pitchers, Only Julian Aguiar has thrown more than 8 innings in Double A. Well, and Reaver San Martin, who hasn't pitched at all, and he's trying to come back from elbow surgery.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's as easy as it can be for the pitchers. But the position guys, it's pretty much the same. I mean, Blake Dunn, he is the only guy that has played in Double A for more than a week and put together a good season. He was the only surprise today for me looking at the cuts. Not that I expected him to make the team, just because there's just a lot of depth in the outfield, and I don't think that he's the kind of guy that they're going to put on the bench. But I also think that it probably, at least from my point of view, would want to see him for more than 6 plate appearances, because he missed the first week of games, and then he's played the last week, and he's played in 4 games, and he's played four for 6 with 2 walks and a steal. And
he's been really
he's been really good, but I just thought, hey, maybe the guy that hit 23 home runs and stole 54 bags last year and had an OPS of 965 in Double A, maybe give him more than 4 games.
Yeah, my only guess there is just that they know that he's not in the mix for that last man on the roster spot, and he's only going to take it bats away from the guys that are. So get him over to minor league camp where he can get all the reps that he wants, and they'll have all the video and they'll have the coaches down there. But don't overreact too much to these cuts. You have to get the rosters down, and like you said, you can't keep them all, and you're going to go ahead and just cut bait. But take your eyes off those guys who aren't duking it out for that roster spot.
And none of these guys were on the 40-man roster either. So, that's you always hear about that in spring training. Who's got options? Who doesn't have options? They're not going to use options on any of these guys. So everybody that was on the 40-man roster, they're all still in big league camp. And, that's usually the guys that are going to make the team. Every so often, you'll get one or two guys that make the roster as non-roster invitees. But, even this year, it's tough to see that happening. If everybody's healthy, at least.
Yeah. Couldn't agree more. All right, let's use some viewer mail questions here to supplement our topic of the week. As always, this is our actual mail from actual viewers. If you want to join the Patreon family, you too can submit viewer mail questions, and we'd love to have you. But the first one here, Doug, is from my friend Joey Gaditza. Actually, no, we're going to skip that one. Sorry, Joe. We'll come back to you later. Our friend Jordan Salisbury. He says, Doug, I've been very impressed with Ricardo Cabrera and Alfredo Duno. Where do you see both of them starting in the minors? And what player in the Reds farm system are you most excited about?
So, like I said earlier, it's Alfredo Duno, the most excited player or excited guy that I'm ready to see this year. I kind of explained why earlier. The same thing applies here. Never seen him play before. Hopefully I'll get to see him play this year. But also, it's just a matter of, he's a catcher who crushed the ball last year. I mean, catchers that can hit are super rare. I'm just looking forward to it. I think that he's probably going to start in Arizona. I think that Cabrera is going to start in Daytona. He spent last year in Arizona, so I think it's just logical that he'll move up after just crushing the ball in Arizona. It doesn't really make any sense to not promote him. The only thing that's interesting with Duno is he's the only guy that the Reds brought up to spring training from the Dominican Summer League last year. Now, I expect more guys to be in Arizona when their season starts in May, but Duno's the only guy there now. And so that kind of gives me the inclination that, there's an outside chance that he may possibly start in Daytona. I don't think it's going to happen, but, if he has a really good spring, it's not impossible. But that was just something that kind of stood out to me when I got the roster. I'm like, he's the only one. Okay.
Yeah.
So they're at least thinking about it then.
Absolutely. All right. Next question comes from Seth Shaner. He says, Doug, if you report on prospects, does that automatically make you a prospect hugger?
No. because I know some people that report on prospects that really seem like they don't like any of the prospects. Not necessarily Reds guys, just in general. So I'm going to go with no on that one.
They're just playing the odds there. Seth also asks, what is the ceiling offensively for Edwin Arroyo? I think this is a very good question because there are high expectations. He kind of was a little bit slow out of the gate last year before heating up in the second half. He's looked really good in spring training so far. So what do you think about Edwin's ceiling?
I think that now, if we're going to look at it in terms of against all major leaguers, I think maybe average, slightly above average bat. But if you look at it just against shortstops, I think he's going to be an above average hitter. I think that he's probably going to hit for you know, a solid average for a shortstop. But I think that he's going to hit for above average power for a shortstop. And then when you toss in that, you know, he can steal 15 or 20 bases, I mean, that's a pretty good offensive shortstop. And then, of course, you know, he's a really good defender too, so that doesn't hurt.
Yeah, that doesn't hurt a bit. He's another one of those guys, he just got that swag to him. He can make us have some real interesting conversations if he bursts onto the scene a little bit sooner than expected. So stay tuned. Next question comes from Jeff Euchler. He says, I know it's only two innings in spring training, but should we be awaiting the Zach Maxwell era in Cincinnati? Relievers don't get much love in rankings, but how close is he to being a contributor?
So I see a lot of love for Zach Maxwell, and I don't want this to come off as me saying that I don't have love for Zach Maxwell, but I think that we should probably pump the brakes a little bit. Mm-hmm. He's got some control issues that he's got to work through. He's never pitched in double A or triple A, and he's already showing control questions. Now, his control has gotten better since college, but it's still an issue. Now, he's got elite stuff. I think he's got two, you know, plus to plus plus pitches in his fastball and breaking ball, but it doesn't matter if you can't throw enough strikes. Like, if you're not going to be a closer if you can't throw enough strikes. And if you're a guy that struggles to consistently find the strike zone, I mean, you're what, an iffy middle reliever, even if you've got elite stuff.
Yeah.
Because a team's not going to be able to rely on you. So I think that you can get excited about the potential there, but I think the Reds probably should take their time with him unless, you know, he comes out and immediately starts throwing a bunch of strikes during the season. Then you can push because he's got the kind of stuff that if he's on, he can get big league hitters out. But if he is a guy who, again, is going to battle that consistency with the strike zone, take your time because you do have time to wait around for it. You know, if you push him when he's not ready, that's not helping anybody. At least in the minor leagues, in the minor leagues, you can go back and rely on that overpowering stuff if you really need to, if you were struggling. You can't do that in the big leagues. Big league hitters are too good.
That's true. Counterpoint, though, if you do rush him, we might get another Ricky Carter moment. And we all deserve it.
Yeah.
R.I.P. R.I.P. Yeah. Ricky Carter.
Hey, you know, I saw him pitching the other day. Was it with Arizona? So
Arizona, yeah.
You know, good luck
to that guy, for sure. All right, we do have some more viewer mail questions, but they aren't specifically about some of the more intriguing prospects. So who else would you like to highlight so far from their time in Goodyear?
So, you know, I wrote about it for Reds Minor Leagues this morning, actually. But Carson Spires is having a pretty good spring. You know, if you go back to his offseason, I guess, is kind of how you want to look at it. But the Reds sent him to the Arizona Fall League after the regular season last year. And he had one walk and a bunch of strikeouts. This spring, he's got one walk and a bunch of strikeouts. Like, he's really looking good when it comes to, you know, he's not walking anybody. He's racking up the strikeouts. Now, I still think that he's a guy who, you know, he's probably not a starting pitcher in the big leagues. Mm-hmm. I think he could get some opportunities to, you know, be a spot starter, a fill-in guy if somebody's going to miss 2 weeks or something like that. You know, he can fill that role. But I think that he's probably more likely to be a reliever in the long term. But, you know, he's got solid stuff. He throws a bunch of strikes. You know, he's not going to be a closer, probably. But, you know, he's had a very good spring. And I think he's a future big leaguer. It's just, you know, I don't really know what role it's going to be in. But, yeah, I think that he's worth highlighting right now because he is pitching very well.
Yeah, we talked about him a little bit on a previous episode. That he's passing the eye test, and I'm also the worst and am firing myself from this podcast because we did have a question from Rich Thompson that says, Doug, first, welcome back. You have been missed, which is super nice. Rich is a super nice guy. I love Rich. He says, Carson Spires has had a really solid run this spring training, but I'm guessing that he does not break camp with the MLB team. With that said, when/if he is resigned to the minors, do you foresee him being sent out as a starter or reliever? So this is a little different than, I guess, what you just said. When he inevitably starts in the minors, do you think they will stretch him out from the beginning or just go ahead and lock him into that reliever role?
I think he'll be a starter if he goes to AAA because you kind of want, especially early in the season, you want those guys to be ready and available if you need them.
Yeah.
If you want to call somebody up as a reliever who's been starting in the minors, you can do that whenever you want. Like, sure. Unless they just started last night, like, they're going to be able to come in right away and pitch out of the bullpen. You can't go the other way. If a guy's been throwing one inning for the last, 7 weeks, you can't ask him to go out there and throw you 75 pitches, the next day. It doesn't work that way. The teams don't treat pitchers like that anymore. So I think he's going to go into the rotation, assuming that they send him to the minor leagues, which I think that me, you, and Rich all agree that that's going to happen. Yeah. Short of injuries, and he needs to step in for somebody.
That Louisville rotation, by the way, is going to be dirty.
Yes. Yeah. Between that rotation and outfield, the bats are going to have some real, fun guys to watch every night.
Good summer in Louisville.
But I think that it's just going to be one of those situations where, you can hedge your bet a little bit by putting him in the rotation rather than the bullpen, even if long term the bullpen's probably going to be the role for him.
Yeah, I think that'd be a good call. Who else you got your eye on?
I don't know.
I'm always watching Chase Petty. Not necessarily. Yeah, because
that was
trying to avoid
guys
crazy.
That were, just sent out. But again, Chase Petty's a guy. I think that, like Rhett Lauder, he could be pushing for a spot pretty quick. I think that, they're both probably behind a guy like Connor Phillips. Just because he's already got that, big league experience. Mm-hmm. He's got elite stuff. He's had some AAA experience. He's going to start in AAA, and I don't think that Rhett Lauder or Chase Petty will. But, if Connor Phillips can't find more consistency with the strike zone, I think those other two guys could pass him up. I really like what I see with Chase Petty, and, he's throwing a lot harder now than he has as a pro ever before.
That's interesting.
In high school, he was a guy, he would routinely hit triple digits in his starts.
Right.
And then as a pro, he was topping out at like 96 and throwing 92 to 94. He basically scrapped his.
Where are we now in the Major League Baseball where we say he's topping out at 96?
I always think about it because, when I started covering prospects, like it was 2006, that was prime Homer Bailey elite level prospect kind of thing. And, he was one of the best pitching prospects the Reds have ever had. He threw 92 to 96. Now you throw 92 to 96, you're just a dude. Like, you're just some random guy. Like, yeah. 96 is nothing anymore.
It's crazy.
But, Chase Petty's, he's real interesting. I want to see what happens there because last year he led the minor leagues for the Reds in ground ball rate. It's like 54%. But he was throwing mostly a two-seamer.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's throwing 99 with four-seamer. Can he, is he still going to get ground balls at that same rate or not? If not, is he going to get more strikeouts because he's throwing harder? He's throwing a four seamer. He's going to probably, the Reds' philosophy generally is throw the four seamer up in the zone.
Mm-hmm.
Balls up in the zone don't get grounded out very often or hit on the ground very often, but they also don't have contact made on them as often.
Right.
So he's in that weird spot where it's like, I don't entirely know what to expect, but I love what I've seen in the past and I'm excited about what could be, but I just don't know. Because you just haven't seen him go out there and, fully formulate the new plan, which clearly he has a new plan because he's back to throwing 99 miles an hour, which is something he hadn't done.
Yeah, and we'll see if they sort of take the leash off him a little bit too. They barely let him go more than a couple innings in his starts last year, so keep an eye on that as well. Let's move forward with a few more viewer mail questions as we wrap this bad boy up. Joey Gaditza, we're coming back to you. Sorry for skipping over you earlier. Joe says, hello, gentlemen. Who is going to have the biggest impact sophomore year amongst these young guys? What does your feeling tell you? Biggest impact sophomore year. So I guess that's not necessarily the best statistical season. Who do you got for this one?
I mean, I want to say Ellie just because I just – everything he does. But I'd be lying to you and everybody else if I didn't say very close hedging that bet with Matt McClain. Yeah, I know that we talked about it earlier. I just love what Matt McClain does. He can do everything well. And I think there's less risk involved with him versus Ellie. There's just not quite as much upside, but still plenty of upside. Yeah. I just love what he can do to the, he can help in so many different ways. But the best part about this is I can answer seven different guys and they're so all the guys. Right answer. They're CBS, all the right answer.
CBS might literally impact the ball the most.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the farthest.
What if Andrew Abbott doesn't have that late season breakdown because, you know, he got a little bit tired and worn out in that, you know, first full season, you know, when he, you know, he throws 175 innings of 3.2 ERA. Like, there's
100%. My answer is Noelvi Marte, rookie of the year and an all-star in his first season. Let's go.
Does that make him a sophomore, though?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, he played like 35 games last year, I think.
We'll let Joey decide. We'll let Joey decide. All right. Next question comes from Skylar Webker. Skylar says, Ellie has looked great, capital G-R-E-A-T, this spring. The walks are up and the strikeouts are down. How much money are we giving him next offseason after he wins the MVP, Gold Glove, and Silver Slugger in 2024? P.S. No such thing as a small sample size. Feelings, not facts. Skylar got the assignment. I love it. Okay, so we'll taper it down a little bit. If Ellie has a breakout season, define that however you want to. He obviously doesn't have to win the Triple Crown.
But he could.
It's on the table. What sort of deal do you think the Reds would have to offer him for him to accept it? What's realistic?
I don't think it's realistic. I don't think that they would be able to make the right kind of offer to him or be willing to make the offer to him.
What was the deal that Bobby Witt Jr. got?
Like $11 billion. I'm not sure.
$11 billion, I think, is the exact amount. I think go back and look at what he got because that would be a sort of similar story. Top prospect, rough first season, but he.
So Bobby Witt Jr. got 11 years, $289 million.
It would have to.
I can't see the Reds coming anywhere close to that for anybody.
It would be shocking, but they should do it, you cowards. Do it tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we look at it. We can look at the Joey Votto contract, and I mean. If we're going to adjust for just even if it's just for baseball inflation, like that's a Joey Votto type contract. So it's not like the team hasn't sort of kind of been there before. But
you could tell the team wasn't happy that they did it with Joey, and he had an MVP.
Yeah, I don't think that if Ellie becomes remotely close to the player that we all think he could be, even if it happens this year, that they can make him an offer that would make sense for him to take because I just don't think that they're willing to go that high in terms of dollars.
Well, they should be doing what the Braves did with Ozzie Albies and Ronald Acuña Jr. and offering it anyway. Make him say no. Give him the chance to, even if it could it be interpreted as a low ball offer or under market value down the road, never underestimate the power of somebody who can grab a pen and suddenly have $100 million in their bank account.
And to be fair, maybe the Reds have made that kind of offer to him or other guys, and they've said no, and we just haven't heard about it because let's be real. The Reds keep things as tight to the vest as any professional sports organization I've ever seen in my life.
That's entirely possible. But for the official answer, Skylar, Doug said it's $11 billion.
Yeah, okay, yeah. He would sign for that.
Yeah, I think so. All right, James Urban says, hey, guys, I heard this great prospect is coming up. His name is Joey Votto. I think we should sign him. Thoughts?
I think we should sign him. Yeah.
I do too. I'm going to skip down one here. Nathan Stirworth for our next question. He actually had one on last week's show, but I did not check it in time and it slipped through the cracks. So he says, the way Votto's career is ending with the Reds reminds me of the way Larkin's career ended. I feel like he also did not get a proper send-off because of some uncertainty about his retirement. Do you all agree? Doug, bat lead off here.
1,000%, I agree. I don't like the fact that the fans were left unsure of what was going to happen in 2024 with both Joey Votto and retirement, non-retirement, where the Reds stood on picking up the option. You know, they just left everybody hanging, like. I didn't like it at all.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. No matter how Joey felt about the whole situation, I'm sure he did not want some send-off. We are well aware that he thinks he can continue contributing to a major league team. the Reds had all the power. They could have said, well, we know we're not picking up the option, so we're going to give you a send-off because it's a business and we're going to make all the ticket sales. And the fans deserve it if they want to play that angle, which do fans deserve anything? That conversation could go for hours. I say yes. I think that it would have been important to the city, especially a town that loves baseball as much as Cincinnati does. They also had the option to literally pick up the option. All right, Joe, you want everyday at-bats? Sorry, we picked up the option. We call the shots. So for 1 year, you're going to play when you play. And then they would still have a payroll less than they had just a few years ago, even paying him all that money. I've gone on at length about the contributions he could have in the clubhouse as well as on the field. So we won't go into it anymore. But yes, Nathan, you're correct. They did us dirty. They did Joey dirty. All right, last question, Doug, from Hooper Powell. He says, saw an article on MLB trade rumors that three players on the Reds do not have options, those being Jose Barrero, Stuart Fairchild, and Ian Jabeau. Who will be sticking around in the organization? Any thoughts?
So I feel pretty comfortable that Jabeau will stick around longer than one of those two guys. He's currently injured, so the Reds have an easy way to keep him around longer. They can just put him on the injured list to start the season. And I think that at least one of Stuart Fairchild and Jose Barrero is either going to be traded or designated for assignment because they're not going to make the team. Now, which one of those two makes the team? So this is what I was getting at earlier. Right now, Stuart Fairchild is performing very well. Jose Barrero is not playing bad, but he's not performing at the same level as Stuart Fairchild. Mm-hmm. But if I were making the call, I would probably pick the guy that can play both the infield and the outfield, especially if it's going to be a guy who I think in both scenarios isn't going to play or isn't going to be asked to do a lot of hitting. If you look at the way this roster is constructed, where are you going to find pinch hits situations for Stuart Fairchild or Jose Barrero?
Right.
Like every single day, they're going to be the third option off of the bench if everybody's healthy. You're not going to be asking that guy to step up and pinch hit for you very often. I'd take the guy with the better defensive flexibility. I don't get to make those calls, though.
I'm going to choose Jose Barrero for that 26-man spot just because of his hair.
Fair enough.
Baseball has nothing to do with it. As a known hair not-haver, I love it. Keep it going, Jose. Yeah, I agree with everything you just said, Doug. All right, that's going to be a good place to wrap it up, I think. Before we go, Doug, please shout out your socials, your websites, everything you want to shout out.
RedLegNation.com, everyday Reds big league stuff. RedsMinorLeagues.com for more minor league stuff. Twitter at DougDirt24 if you dare. I don't always suggest it. That's it.
I love it. Please go check Doug out. He is an awesome follow online, and they're pumping out awesome content all the stinking time, nonstop over there on his two websites. So highly, highly encourage everybody to go check it out. Go to the Riverfront Cincy on all our socials and web pages, and we're doing some stuff too. Most of it we think is somewhat okay, mediocre at best. But thank you to everyone for listening and supporting us here at the Riverfront. Tell your friends, tell your mom's friends that she has in yoga class, Pilates, bar, whatever she's going to. She has friends and she should tell them. Please remember to subscribe where you can subscribe, follow where you can follow, like us, reviews, the good ones, all that kind of good stuff. And once again, shout out to the family at patreon.com/riverfrontcincy. We'd love to have you join in on the hijinks. Shout out to Adam Dunn. Shout out to Lee Salverto, Wayne Crin, Chicky, and Eli Cash. For Doug Gray and Jacob Herdebees, this is Nate Dotson saying so long, Cincinnati.